Download shows at iTunes, and don't forget to like us on facebook.com/StageTheLetterNStudio or tweet us at StageTheLetterNStudio. I'm Sari Gametta, sitting in for Dime Roberts. Thanks so much for listening. You must be crazy
to think. Come one, come all to the KBOO Community Radio Book and Record Sale, Sunday, September 14th, from 9 a.m., when the KBOO members only are allowed during the first hour of the sale, and then from 10 a.m. till 5 p.m., everyone can take advantage of truly interesting and unusual books, records, CDs, tapes, videos, DVDs, whatever else has been donated. The sale will take place this year at the Volunteers of America Building, 537 Southeast Alder in Portland. Remember, all sales benefit your community radio station. For more information about the annual book and record sale, look at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. And don't forget to tune into KBOO Friday night at midnight for the Broken Record Show, an offbeat sound patchwork composed entirely from items for the sale and served up by various KBOO disc jockeys and voices. That's the Broken Record Show, Friday night, September 12th from midnight till 3 a.m. on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Have a go. I'd like to be a gallery. Put you all inside my show. Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hand him on my wall.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. My guest this week is Kristen Kennedy, the visual art curator for PICA, the Portland Institute for Contemporary Art. Kristen's here to talk about TBA 14, which is the time-based art festival. Welcome to KBOO, Kristen.
Thanks, Joseph. It's nice to be here.
TBA 14, the little book on the cover is an old lady with her eyes closed. It's a bit of a departure for PICA, which is known as, you know, art and youth. Why is she on the cover?
Well, I think we pride ourselves on presenting multi-generational artists since our founding, but oftentimes they're these virtuosic artists like Spalding Gray or Sekou Sundiata or any number of artists that we brought through the years, Akira Kasai. But this project and the woman that you're seeing on the cover is part of a piece by a group called Mammalian Diving Reflex. And the show is called All the Sex I've Ever Had. This is the West Coast premiere of the project. Basically, the premise is that the collaborative Mammalian Diving Reflex has gathered six people over 65.
Are they actors?
They're not actors. And they are going through sort of extensive interviews with the collaborators. And out of those interviews will come a script that the people over 65 will perform live. And it's a beautiful, touching piece. And again, it's about sort of multi-generational understanding, trust. Obviously, it's about sex, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's interviews with people about the sex they've had.
Yes, all the sex they've ever had.
And you say it's a West Coast premiere, so they've done it before somewhere else?
Yeah, they've done it in Asia and I think in Canada, but in each iteration, it's dealing with a local population. So it's new each time.
Oh, so these are Portland people?
These are Portland
wow.
people.
So yes. It could be somebody's mom.
Could be somebody's mom, yeah.
It sounds interesting, but it's reality. It's documentary, but
yes.
Scripted, and it's a live performance.
Yes, exactly. And Mammalian Diving Reflex was here one time before on the festival. They did this project called Haircuts by Children, where they and some hairdressers trained children that were between the ages of like 6 and 10 to cut hair. And we set up hair cutting stations and people could come one after the other to get their hair cut. And that was really about trust. And it was an incredibly beautiful, touching project. And I think that this artist group in particular has a certain way with dealing with this very mundane, even cultural material, our personal lives and how we interact with each other, and bringing it to a transformative place. So it's a very simple premise, but it's also, you know, shocking and dangerous. We had some people who, you know, went through the beginning interviews and then couldn't go through with it, you know, because it becomes too real to talk about some of our personal intimate encounters and what that means and how we're perceived in the world because of it.
Will the final thing be a show that runs over a few nights, the same every night?
I'm not sure if it's the same every night, actually. I think they go through that decision process right now. The artists are in town working with the people on the script. It runs from September 17th to the 20th. It's 7 p.m. each night. It's approximately 2 hours and includes a post show that includes a post show Q&A.
But is it a drama? I mean, is there an interplay between the characters, or is it one confessional kind of thing?
You know, I'm not sure. One of the things that happens on the festival quite often is that we're bringing in new work or commissioning work, and sometimes even the curators don't know what they're going to see. But it's about understanding the practice of the artists that we bring and encouraging them to take risks and experiment. So we'll be seeing it for the first time on September 17th, along with all of the rest of the audience.
So you trust mammalian diving reflex?
We do. Yeah, and certainly the interviewees do.
The there's a very strong musical lineup this year. Let's just talk about a couple of them that really jump out. If you get the little booklet, which is available everywhere, it's arranged chronologically, I think.
Yes, it is, yeah.
So if you see at the beginning, there's page 6, Samita Sinha. Who's she?
Yeah, so Samita Sinha is a violinist and a composer and a vocalist and a performance artist. And she combines northern classical Indian music, folk music, ritual music, and performance. And we're presenting the world premiere of a piece called Cipher. So again, this is a very, very new work. There's some work in progress documentation on our website that you can see. Actually, each artist has pretty good video documentation. So if you want to explore a little more, that's a place to go. She also has this sort of sculptural practice. So her body is an instrument. Obviously, her voice is her most powerful instrument. And it is a virtuosic, masterful, compelling voice, even though she's a very young artist. But she also has things on her body that act as instruments or props during the performance. And I would say that it is true that music has, there's a through line of really incredible music this year. And Angela Maddox, our artistic director, has talked several times in previews about how this year is about the voice, the internal voice coming outward. And the next, on the next, very next page is an artist named Tanya Tadak, who is a complete force. She is doing a live score of the famous movie Nanook of the North.
So that was a silent movie.
It was a silent movie, and it also is considered one of the first documentaries. And it's very controversial. It's of the Inuk people, of which Tanya Tadak is an Inuk person.
Where are they from? Canada?
Yes.
The top bit of Canada.
Yes.
Right?
So she is an Inuit throat singer, as are her people. And that kind of singing and song is woven through every day. And it's a way to describe their experiences and to share stories. And so Tanya scores the film, you know, in her way, reclaiming it in a way, adding the true voices of her people. And she's a collaborator of Bjork's. She's collaborated with a lot of different pop and avant-garde and experimental musicians. Her voice is incredible. Her band is incredible. I keep using the word insane to talk about it, but I think it's because it's a really bombastic, deep, lively performance, and I think if you go to see Samita and you go to see Tanya Tadak, you're going to come out changed. There's other music that's running through the festival. Every page almost has something.
Tanya Tadak, she's only on Friday and Saturday, the 12th and 13th of September.
Yes.
Why is she only doing two shows?
Well, I mean, I think we don't have artists often, unless the show requires it, perform for, you know, four or five notes nights in a row. So I think Tanya's engagement two nights is probably what she can do. Also, it's a very physically exhausting performance in both cases. And there's also a lot of work on the festival. Tim Hecker, who is a composer from Canada, has a big cult and underground following. He's also a consummate collaborator with many experimental producers, composers, and musicians.
What kind of music?
It's these sort of enveloping, abstract, looping compositions. They really engulf you. There's a certain amount of melancholy to them. He has an incredible discography, many, many recordings. He's quite prolific.
Is it dance music?
It's definitely not dance music. It's really something to sit and listen to. The sound is really important. And we're presenting it in Lincoln Hall. So it's really going to be a beautiful place to take the music in. And it's sort of a rare chance to see him perform. He doesn't perform very often. He's from Vancouver, BC, and he's a little bit hermetic. So the second we announced that he was on the festival, tickets started selling right off the bat because he's very well loved. Yeah, tickets are selling online, and this is the first year you can print them out at home. And we have two box offices, one at Pica, which is downtown, and one which will be at The Works, which is our late night venue. And that space opens, that box office opens on the opening night of the festival, September 11th.
So the downtown one is Southwest 10th Avenue, 415 Southwest 10th Avenue, near the Ace Hotel. And The Works this year, every year you take over a different building.
Yes.
Last year was a big warehouse in the Conway area in Northwest, which I drove by the other day. It's been gutted. They're doing something with it.
It's going to be a new Seasons.
Oh.
Yeah.
So it's true what they say. First come the artists and then the yuppies.
Exactly.
Well, so what have you got this year?
So this year we're over in Southeast Industrial on Southeast 8th between Harrison and Lincoln, over there by the Super Goodwill, New Cascadian Baking, and Tennessee Red's Barbecue, all those places over there. It's an interesting building because it's actually two warehouses attached through, and there's sort of this center corridor. So on one side of The Works this year will be a theater, a place for music, comedy, experimental film, dance, et cetera, and so forth. A beer garden, a pop-up kitchen, lots of hangout space. And on the other side are a few visual art installations. And the visual art installations and happenings happen all over the city. So, but there's two that are really centered in that space over at The Works.
So it's all warehouses.
It's an old warehouse, yeah, but it has a certain intimacy to it. This warehouse is not smaller, but the layout is more human. Mm-hmm. And so I think, and the beer garden is small, so it's going to get hot and sweaty back there, which is good for a late night club. I think it's very accessible. It's on some major bus lines. It's really bikeable. It's walkable from a lot of Southeast neighborhoods. And certainly you can like pop over any of the bridges. And there's tons of parking down there because Southeast Industrial is, you know, a day use kind of place. So when you come there in the evening, it's we'll have the place to ourselves.
And the idea of The Works has always been that the artists will show up and you can mingle with them. And there's visual art going on in another room.
Yeah. So The Works is really conceived at the founding of the festival. And the festival is founded by Christy Edmonds. And our first festival is in 2003. And she had been attending a lot of festivals all over the world, and they always had this sort of industry tent or club or space where the artists and the curators got together. And when she was thinking about Portland being this sort of similarly European-sized city where people got around on foot and bikes and public transportation, and all the performance venues were sort of on that line, she thought about creating a space like that where artists and audiences could gather, but she wanted it to be open to the public and not just an insular space. So we put a lot of programming in there, food, and it really is meant for people to come talk about the shows that they've seen, hang out together. And over the years, it's become this sort of temporary art center that exists for 10 days that has all kinds of different work and people in it. And then it disappears. So if you're there, you're a part of it. If you're not, it vanishes.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. My guest this week is Kristen Kennedy. She's the visual art curator at PICA, and she's here talking about TBA 14, which runs from September the 11th to September the 21st. A couple more musical pieces we should mention are Maya Beza and the Portland Cello Project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Maya is, a consummate cello performer. The New Yorker calls her the cello goddess. She's Israeli born. She's collaborated with Steve Reich. Again, all of these powerful female musical forces on the festival this year. And she'll be doing, a straight up concert at PSU Lincoln Hall. It's going to be beautiful.
Straight up?
Her and her instrument. That's the performance, is the music.
But is it classical music?
No, it's pop and rock and experimental and avant-garde music reinterpreted by Beiser and the Cello Project.
Mm-hmm. And then Cynthia Hopkins.
Mm-hmm. Cynthia Hopkins is a musician and a theater artist and a comedian. And this piece, A Living Documentary, is really about her life. And she's had a really complicated life. She and has kind of brought that out through these multidisciplinary, multimedia performances. She is very well known in the contemporary art and theater world. This piece is going to be incredible. She's a winding storyteller. She's virtuosic on the accordion, has a beautiful voice. She can play the piano. And she is one of these character actors that can come in and out of impersonations. And so the piece is... It is a story of her life, but she inhabits several characters through the course of the night.
That the works is mm-hmm. always, the food is always good and interesting.
Yeah.
Last year, the theme was carnival, right?
Well, it was sort of carnival without rides. The group that we've been working with last year and this year is called Team Delicious. It's made up of a group of people led by Liz Calderon and Chef Jake Sheffield, who is the chef at Gruner. But they take a decidedly different approach to this sort of festival food. They're running a pop-up kitchen that has an extensive pantry, and they kind of are dipping into it each night this year in a project called So Good Meals that's supposed to evoke this sort of bygone era of fancy home cooking that was provoked by Better Homes and Garden and old Bon Appetits.
Is this like Mad Men kind of food?
Yeah, it's like Mad Men
food. Serves?
Exactly. It's about, those quizzical loafs and, making a hamburger for your kids with pimento olive eyes or whatever it was, this like decoration and whimsy that was brought into the home in that era. But it's updated for now. And they always have tons of surprises. Like they were, I went into their little office at the works yesterday and they had on their board saying like, you know, hopes and dreams. And one of them was twerking Jell-O molds. So you can tell they have a really good sense of humor and they want to sort of mash up the now with the yesteryear. And they're running the food at the works every night. And the food there is quite affordable. You can get something for a couple of dollars or you could have a full meal there. And when you're running from show to show, really it is the place to go to get food and hang out. And Merit Badge, they're a cocktail collaborative and they are running the bar. They ran the bar last year, so they make exquisite cocktails. This isn't like well kind of stuff. Again, quite affordable, made by real cocktail people.
TBA always kicks off with a big... Is it a big dinner and then a party?
Yeah, so opening night at the works is free. This year it's opened with an opening night dinner. We love to sit down at a table, share a meal together. And this year that opening night dinner is being run by Side Yard, which is a project of Stacey Givens. And she calls it a seed to table dinner because Side Yard is a farm and it's also a catering business. And so she's growing all the food. It's going to be beautiful, fresh food. And there's an artfulness to it and a design, and the ceramicist Daniel DeFord is making vessels for the dinner and it's going to be really beautiful. And that's happening on opening night, September 11th. It flows into opening night at the works, and we're opening up with a group called The Satisfaction. They were born and raised in Tacoma and Seattle and Hawaii. They kind of have this, you know, original music that harkens back to funk and psychedelic. They call it feminista sci-fi. It has a pop edge, a funk edge, a hip-hop edge.
Talk about the visual art, because you curate it. Where will it be? Just at the works?
No, the visual art is in three venues this year around town. And there's quite a few performative iterations happening within the installation. So at the works, since we're talking about it, where there's things happening every single night, we have daytime hours from noon to six, where people can come and view two projects. One is a major new commission by an artist named Jennifer West, who's out of LA, who's taken hundreds of yards of original film strips that she has made. They're on 35 millimeter and 70 millimeter film. And we've made an installation out of this physical film stuff where the audience comes in with a flashlight and performs and makes a film in the room. It's kind of like being inside a projector in this very lo-fi way. And it's about film dying, the material of film dying. And it's about film history and cultural history. It's really fun and beautiful and subtle and weird because all of your synapses are firing. You're making the image. And there's something about that hand-eye coordination that comes into play. And then we have a group called Mesher, which is made up of two artists, Brenna Murphy and Birch Cooper. And they're local artists. And their work is made with sound and light and these sort of never-ending looping sound cycles. It is, again, it's a sort of very physical experience to be in the room. Your bodies become part of the conduits for the sound that's happening. So both of those projects are happening at the works, and you can see them during the day or in the evening when you're there to see performances. On three nights there at the works, on the 18th, 19th, and 20th, we have a project by an artist named Jesse Sugarman, who has completed a long project over the last 2 years. He's been making this experimental documentary about the car industry. He embedded himself in Michigan, took over abandoned Pontiac dealerships and reopened them on the sly. He filmed auto industry workers going through the motions of their everyday factory chores, and it forms this beautiful choreography because they're, you know, precision in body movement is really beautiful. And he also filmed people who had been in car crashes going through their sort of pantomime of what happened to them in the car. This is a 3-channel piece. It's being screened on the Harrison side of the building. Massive, beautiful, cinematic, engulfing work.
On the outside or the inside?
On the outside. So 3 nights, you can come sort of in and out of the piece. It runs about 35 minutes long in its entirety. The backdrop is this Southeast industrial, you know, wasteland. The Pacific Power Tower is right behind it. It's going to be really interesting and strange.
Are there any rooms with paintings hanging on walls?
Not this year.
Oh.
I don't really curate a lot of exhibitions of paintings, even though I love paintings. The work on the festival is about a sort of collision between genres and artists that are working at the intersections of a lot of those genres. Sometimes it involves really traditional forms like ceramics and sculpture and painting and printmaking, but it's seen in a quite a different way. And I guess that's a good way to start moving over to the other building where there are installations. Pica has this space on Southwest 10th between Washington and Stark, and we do exhibitions and performances and lectures all year long. That space is a great space to come and see exhibitions, and we've taken over the second floor of the building thanks to Dick and Lori Singer, who own the building. They're lending it to us. It's a 10,000 square foot space with no columns, so it's a beautiful gallery. My preparators joke that we've drywalled an entire city block down there, but we have 2 installations. One of them is another major new commission by an artist who's coming from Sweden named Emily Roysden. The work has been developed over 2 years. You might have seen on the Conway Warehouse that giant sundial. That was a project by Emily Roysden, and she did a series of conversations embedded in the festival last year with astrologers, astronomers, feminist, eco-terrorists, witches, lighting designers, choreographers, about the nature of time. And so what has resulted in all of that research is a very quiet, sort of stoic installation of 50 handmade ceramic clocks, a big neon sculpture, and some kind of moving stands. And there's also going to be a text that Emily wrote over the last few years read in the space on occasion. Mm-hmm. And then there's another installation in that space by a local artist named Lisa Radon, who is a poet and a writer and an object maker. And we've produced a chapbook of a new poem called Infinity Increaser. Her exhibition has the same title. And the exhibition is of objects or things that are tools for other tools to make other tools work. So a reconstruction of a part of a lever that was designed by someone to prove that Stonehenge could be made by one person and other things, sort of magical objects.
You always do talks by the artists, mm-hmm. and they're all going to be in Southwest 10th at Pica.
Right. So one of
they're free.
Yeah, they're free. And one of the way, and the exhibitions are free to see. And one of the ways to take in the exhibitions would be to come to these noontime talks at Pica, and then you could just see the exhibition downstairs. There's one other visual art project. It only happens one evening, and it's happening in the basement of a warehouse in Northeast Portland twice. It's a performance art piece by a Japanese artist named Aki Sasamoto. She operates in between poetry, performance, sculpture, and drawing. She's telling a story about the underground and the above ground in a sort of improvisational way. She says of the piece one thing, that it's about how she hates mosquitoes, but it's really about being an artist. And she sometimes relates an artist to being a criminal or someone who operates underground. Pica and the festival is run on the steam of a lot of volunteers, and they all earn tickets. There's a massive volunteer effort going on right now to build things. We'll need volunteers right up to the opening of the festival. So if you want to usher a show or build a wall or do anything, any number of tasks related to the festival, all the details for how to be hooked up for shifts are online.
On pica.org?
Yes.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. My guest this week was Kristen Kennedy, the visual art curator at Pica. And Kristen was talking about TBA 14, the time-based art festival that begins on Thursday, September the 11th and runs through September 21st. Thank you for coming to KBOO.
Thanks, Kristen. Joseph.
Have you heard about the Melting Pot Silent Mobile Dance Parties?
Silent dance. Doesn't sound very fun.
Actually, it's a lot of fun. Picture 200 people dancing with headphones to the same music. The Melting Pot Radio Show will have a series of silent dance parties from 8 to 10 p.m. Tuesdays in Portland parks and public spaces. That's Tuesdays from 8 to 10 p.m. For more information and this week's location, go to kboo.fm/silent dance parties.
Muy buenas tardes. A continuación, un corte informativo en español. Mandatarios latinoamericanos y europeos, así como empresarios y expertos, se unen como la Comisión Global de Política sobre Drogas y lanzarán un comunicado que critica la estrategia de la guerra contra el narcotráfico y además llaman a frenar la criminalización por su uso y posición de drogas ilícitas para proceder a su regulación. La Comisión Global es consciente de que sus propuestas son polémicas y generarán rechazo, pero insta a los gobiernos a poner fin a las medidas severas basadas en ideologías represivas para sustituirlas por políticas más efectivas formadas por evidencia científica, principios de salud pública y normas de derechos humanos. El informe será presentado este martes en la sede del Museo de Arte Moderno de Nueva York. Un ataque terrorista en la capital de Chile provoca al menos 14 heridos. El atentado tiene lugar 3 días antes de cumplirse el 41 aniversario del golpe militar contra el presidente Salvador Allende.